Welcome to Growth Sessions. My name's Tony. I'm here with my good friend, Kim Gibson from Gibby's Gardens. Kim, how are you today?
I am excellent. Thank you, Tony. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, great. Thank you. No, it's a pleasure. I like having you guys on the show, and it's nice to just get the word out there. Let's just start from the beginning. So where did you, to give us a little bit of history of Gibby's Gardens, give our podcast listeners some background on yourself and then the business that you guys, how you started.
Sure. So we had recreational cannabis legalized in 2016 here in Massachusetts. And the good thing of that was that kids didn't need kids, adults, all ages, didn't have to be concerned about having it on their person, in their home, in their car, and so on. Our youngest son, Joe, Fred and I and Joe started this business. Our youngest son was growing cannabis to the legal numbers, of course. And in 2017, they started talking about maybe we should get a piece of this business, piece of this industry. So they figured it out, and then they came to me. And we've always had our entrepreneur kind of hat on through our lives. We've had various jobs that we've held or businesses that we've ran. So that didn't scare me so much. But as far as the actual regulations of cannabis, that was kind of intense. So that was 2017. And I went to the regulations. It sounded like for recreational, Massachusetts was going to stick with what they had for the medicinal regs for recreational, because they just didn't have time really to flip at that point. So I got in there, started reading it, and learned just enough to be dangerous. And we went to the town and got in front of them. We were the first ones to stand in front of them as a family, mom, dad, and son. And I think we became like the new face of cannabis. The next folks in behind us were the suits, the lawyer, the security director. And so I think we kind of softened it a bit. I think they would have been a little bit more standoffish had it been the suits first. And we just said to the town, look, this is what we're interested in doing. Are you going to be user friendly or should we look elsewhere? And that was the start. And now, of course, we blame ourselves, but Uxbridge is now the mecca in Massachusetts, more community host agreements than any other town. I spent a lot of time that first year educating the selectmen, educating anyone who wanted to speak to me. At the same time, I was like whispering to my associates, we're actually thinking about having a cannabis cultivation business. And I would get really quiet. And of course, what I was doing at that time for my day job was, very professional project manager running million-dollar projects, So there was always kind of that wide-eyed, no, really? And I would just talk through it. And by the time I was done, I had gained more confidence. And people would say, it's a legal industry. Good luck with that. And so I little by little got rid of my own stigma that comes from the 70s, when that was when my husband and I really smoked cannabis in our youth. And so little by little, I gained more confidence. And certainly, Tony, you and your team have been in our sight many times. And while it may benefit you bringing in new cultivators through, it also, I found, affirmed what we were doing to us as well. To have new licensees, people just interested in the industry coming through and giving us positive feedback on our efforts, our team, and little by little, particularly in the first couple of years, it helped me personally, and I think it helped our team too, just to say, okay, we must be in the right direction.
It's reaffirming to you, because like even too now, industry itself, when I tell some people that what I do, and we don't grow cannabis, we're like a little bit different than you, but we're involved with a lot of square footage of cannabis. But like when you tell certain people, and I feel like it's educating them. Like, and you and I have talked about that before, about how when you educate people and once they understand the medicinal value of this herb, and you go down that road of how many people it's helping, and all of a sudden it really opens up a lot of people's eyes, how it's such a beneficial herb. It's just amazing.
Exactly. And one of the reasons that I succumbed to the energy of my other housemates in actually venturing into this business and this industry is that I have grown herbs and made medicinal herbs all my adult life. So my heart is in, to your point, in cannabis. And I don't like to call it a medicine. I like to call it a nutrient, because the finding where our endocannabinoid systems are imbalanced and determining which cannabinoids from the plant we need to get relief or strength or whatever, you know, regardless of whether a consumer has a medical card or not, I believe it's 70% or more that are self-medicating or self-nutrienting in one way or another, be it pain or anxiety or sleep or seizures, tremors. I mean, it's amazing what this plant is capable of doing. And we are just scratching that surface. You know, I read an article in the Worcester magazine about a year and a half ago saying doctors encouraged by the positive impact of cannabis on Crohn's disease. And I was like, yes. And so I'm reading this article and it was talking about how they're finding that cannabis doesn't just mask it. It's actually healing Crohn's in people. Oh. And I was just really elated to see anything like that, that doctors were seeing. But of course, it finished the article. The last paragraph said, pharmaceutical companies are hopeful that this will lead to new medicines in the future. And I thought, there you go. You know, that heaven forbid you use an herb from Mother Nature and fix what ails you. It's important that they put it into a chemical formula, make it in a lab somewhere, and then charge you buku bucks for it. And that just kind of reinforced this incentive to put a pure quality product out there. You know, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is that we are a premium product. We put spiritual love and gratitude into our plants from the time we clone them, from the time we take the cuttings, and all the way through the caring, the raising, the growing, the harvesting, and the finishing and packaging. You know, our employees just are focused on the best product going out there. We want the energy that our consumer gets from our products at their end to equal the amount of good energy that we've put into it. To be good energy and a quality product, and to work with the folks out there who need it.
That's so impactful. I mean, just like those are some of those, like, just great rewards of the business, you know, that just the rewards of the industry as people, when they're doing it for the right reasons, it's just, you can see it. I mean, that's why it's such a joy actually coming up to your site and introducing you to people. And it's great. Hey, definitely. What do you see as some of the, as a smaller grower, and you guys are self-funded, you guys did it all yourself. What do you feel like some of the biggest challenges are for people getting into the industry? Like of a small scale, you know, I mean, obviously it's funding is always a big one. We know that.
Probably not anything so different from other industries, except that this one has the licensing process behind it. And once again, in particular, I would say Massachusetts licensing, but I don't know that that's necessarily harder than other states. I just don't have that experience, but the licensing is extensive. Some of the paperwork and the details that they're looking for, it always surprises me that they're even asking us for that. One, because it's a brand new company just starting off. In small establishments, predominantly their new businesses. And so there's a lot of question marks there that we don't really know until we get going, but yet you're supposed to put forth this detailed plan. So the licensing process, of course, has its own challenges. You know, we started right at the beginning. We were able to put in for a micro business license in May of 2018. I got it in June 1 of 2018. And so right at the beginning, so I feel like the Cannabis Commission was learning along with us. So now it's 4 years later almost, and the experience that the new people are having should be more streamlined, but it doesn't appear so. It appears that there's this whole new wave of new folks at the commission now, new investigators, new so on, and they're coming in with their own intensity and their own questions. And so the licensing certainly, and it's big for anybody, but when you're a small establishment, you don't have a legal team. You're not saying, okay, you guys handle all that licensing paperwork and let us know when it's us. And so for a small establishment, those small companies, small establishments, what we always tell people when they say, all right, number one thing you would target or you would suggest, and we always say, pick your team well.
Sure.
Number one, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Make sure you've got the wordsmith paperwork or guru. You absolutely need one of those, or you're going to end up paying somebody for it. You know, you've got your cultivator who's helping design. You've got, you know, so pick your team well. That's huge. And then when you're a family business, you can't always pick your team, but hopefully it's a good team and you all get along. So pick your team. Finances is a huge, huge challenge for small establishments. You know, it's a lot of money. You get your real estate, so you've got your lease, unless you own it. But even if you own it, you have a mortgage.
Mortgage.
Right from the gate, before you can even press submit on that, before you can even start the process of licensing, you need a real estate. And so that's expensive. And then, of course, you start fitting up. And so money's a biggie. And I guess it's more of a biggie to hold on to your own business. That's the challenge, right?
Yes.
I mean, a lot of small establishments start selling equity just to stay alive, just to make it to the finish line. And that's a blessing, you know, that you can get there and you can still have partial ownership, hopefully, not sell the whole license, but you just got to hope that those folks that have come on board your team fit the team. And,
I agree.
You know, if you're desperate, that's a challenge. And that's a challenge for any small company to do that. It's not unique to cannabis, but, you know, our state has promoted and said that it is really all about the little guy and woman owned and equity applicants and all that. And they certainly have put a lot of resources, a lot of time into it, but, you know, once you've got your license and you're released, you're pretty much on your own. Working on zero interest loans and so on, but that's really only for equity applicants. It kind of is hard, just as hard for any small establishment to get going and find the money. So I'm hoping that they broaden who can apply for that, you know, qualified.
It's almost like a cannabis SBA loan, kind of, you know, it's almost.
Exactly.
And I know that they're talking about it in New York as well. They were talking about they're going to, I don't know the numbers. I read some things online. It was pretty giant numbers that they're going to release funds to help support some small, it's all the small ones. And small, and they said small and some mid. New York's only like small and large licenses, but I could see it helping people get going because like you and I talked about, and I talk about this with architects all the time, that they get their license. They're dreaming big and we love it. Love the ambition. And then when the architect comes in and says, we're going to design it, this is going to be your cost. And then they're hoping to raise these funds. And then we already know it's going to cost so much more than what you thought it was.
I know.
You live that world. And then they say, so go ahead.
Because we got into it early, we were able to kind of link arms with everyone else who was getting into it early. And we really developed relationships, you know, folks in, you know, next door Caroline's and other people that we were able to share the adventure with, you know, and that was a huge resource to us. But one of the very first conferences I went to. I went to a presentation by a legal accounting team, and they said, whatever you think it's going to cost, whatever time you think it's going to take, double it and double it again. And so I'm coming from a design build background. You know, this is my thing, you know, and I was sure that I was on the mark. But I tell you what, I could almost guarantee right to the T, double and double again what I thought it would be, and time frame the same. And so that was good advice. I didn't really listen to it, you know. That's okay. But we had the advantage of me coming from, I'm a licensed builder. I come from design build specialty contracting. So I had a lot of benefits starting this. But if someone doesn't have that, that's part of that team choices again. If somebody doesn't have that in their background, they don't have anyone who has an accounting mindset. You know, there's a lot of things your team can bring to you that can reduce the price and the time. But if you're coming in and you're taking that phone call from a consultant firm that says, hey, for $100,000, I can guarantee you a license. We had that phone call, and we're sitting at the kitchen table looking at each other going, hello, micro business here, little guy. Yes. And he said, oh yeah, I can probably prorate it, but we never heard back from him. And there you go. I mean, that's true.
It really is. It does take a full understanding of good partners within the business. Like you said, you have to have people that can do, you wear many hats as business owners, as we talk about, and you have to be able to get started and then, you know, and have a plan. And kind of and try to follow that plan, you know, build to what you can afford, because there's no sense. You got to get in on it now. And I still feel, even too, like you said, you're 4 years deep into it almost coming this July. Yes. And the industry is still such a young industry. There's some legacy markets like out west, but it's still like they're trying to figure it out. I mean, like even the people that are writing the legislation on it and all these. The people at the commissions, they're still trying to figure it out. I mean, they don't know how many people they need.
You know, this last year, we've had the benefit of having all five of the new commissioners come through our facility. I think they just recommend us because we're what they wanted to see predominantly, a small, you know, unique, the new face of cannabis, a family business. And we're an open book. I mean, it's hard not to be an open book in this industry anyway. You got to show everything. However, some of the bigger establishments are more, they feel more proprietariness. And we're hey, people helped us when we get started. We really want to be available to people. And we often, to your point, we often tell people, just start small. You just want to get growing. Get your first grow room and get growing, because then you're facing revenue. You know, we had a group not far from here. He was trying to raise $3 million or something. And he wanted to do the full fit up, the cultivation, the production room, the whole shebang. And we said, well, that's great if you can do it. But if you can't and you're facing losing your license or whatever, then start somewhere, you know, just break a piece off. And but that's not everybody's business plan. It is something that we talk up quite a bit, and it's worked for us. We're actually right now addressing our last final fit up, which will bring our cultivation up to the 5,000 square foot maximum that we have as a micro business. So we've grown in a manner that has made sense for us. And we're also getting more into manufacturing. And I've learned so much. There's all
different avenues.
What's that?
There's all different avenues that within the micro license, I think you're allowed to do like three of the, you can cultivate, you can produce, you can manufacture and transport. There you go.
Yes.
It's awesome. I mean, that's a great license.
That being said, we just got our van last December, like 3 months ago. Because we just didn't have the revenue stream to purchase a van.
Yep.
We did a lot of creative fundraising. We did friends and family, short-term high-interest loans, and we're extremely blessed and humbled by folks stopping at our house and writing us out a check. And they weren't all big numbers. Some of them were small, but that's what they had saved up. And they believed in us and they believed in the industry. It was very, very precious to us. And so our commitment to them is that Fred and I would continue working our day jobs. We would not use their funds to support us, and that we would pay them back in a certain amount. So these last couple of years have been very aggressive paybacks. And that was part of the deal that allowed us to fund ourselves. It's been a struggle, but that time will come when it'll ease up.
Course.
You know, any other industry that would be celebrated to put it all back in the business and, you know, pay off the fit up and so on. In this industry, I don't know how much your listeners know about the taxation, but we're limited to what's called 280E, and it's so limited. You can't write off a lot of the fit up. And so all of those payouts that we're giving for the fit up of the company are reflected on the taxes as income to us, income that we never saw a dime of, but we'll get past this and that'll all be paid off. And we're getting there. So it's
awesome. And I think too, like, things for, you know, listeners out there that are either new to the podcast or even just new to cultivation, it's growing at scale is such a different animal. Okay. I mean, I know you guys talk about that when I bring new people in, and like you're saying, just get started. You know, they might have a small, they might even have 1,000 square feet, maybe even less. They might have a 500 square foot grow and 250, which is, that's a good, I mean, it's good to start. But I mean, once you start scaling up, you know, the bigger you get, there's more ways it can go sideways for sure.
Indeed. And, you know, as any business owner, we say, you know, if we could only do it without employees, not that we dislike our employees, but when you start adding more personnel, it gets more complicated. I mean, we just started offering health insurance benefits in December, and we implemented our 401k investments in January 1, and we only have 13 employees, but that's important to us as a, you know, as a family, that this is a legitimate work. This is, you know, this is a valued core group of people that, I mean, they're all kind of youngsters, and the mom in me is always perpetually there. And I'm saying, yes, I know we like, you like working here, but we want to see you venture out and try new things. And, but that's all part of the ideology of Gibby's Garden, where, you know, we have relationship within our walls, and it's all about relationship with our retail partners and any manufacturing partners that we get over time. You know, we're honored when somebody buys our product. Yes, we think it's the most premium and we put a lot of love into it, but selling that and branding that is more than just saying, okay, I like your price, I wanna buy your product. Knowing that we stand behind our product. We're one of the few cultivators that have told our retail partners, if somebody brings back our product dissatisfied, you make good on that and we'll make good with you. Because obviously it's a no return policy in most retail stores, but it's important to us that we hear the feedback, that we know how to address it, and that our retailers are protected by us taking responsibility so it doesn't get reflected on them, you know. And thankfully it never happens.
It doesn't happen. Well, it's, I think too, that goes back to the, like, we talk about it too, you and I have talked many times, and it's the relationship you build with, like, you're building, like, we build a relationship with you as a vendor, and then you're building relationship because you're in turn a vendor to the retail. So it's that relationship and that trust where they want to call you, or if you want to call us, like, yeah, what do you need, we'll get it done. It's kind of, It's tough. I mean, it is definitely a dog eat dog world out there, and you see some snake oils going on. But we just try to limit yourself. You limit your contact with that kind of people. They're going to be there. There's no matter what.
We're definitely migrating into the time where there is more product than retailers can handle. And you know, 16, 18 months ago, they were afraid that they wouldn't be able to get enough product on their shelves. But they opened up more retails than cultivations to get started with in this state. Mm-hmm. So now it's not incredibly a problem, but it's a reality. The big cultivators, have a lot of product on their shelves. And so they're cutting prices and, you know, trying, offering long terms for payment, that type of thing. Something that a small establishment can't really support. One that's, you know, self-supported and still doing the payoffs and so on. So that's where relationship comes in all that much more. You know, we are offering value added. We are generating product info sheets. We call them cheat sheets in the house, but I try not to use that term as they go out to retailers. Yeah. So we're sending laminated. We check the retailer's inventory before we deliver. We create this product information sheet, what Gibby's product this retailer has on their menu, you know, on this date. And we talk about what methods they have them in, eights, pre-rolls, and so on, what the cannabinoids are, what the terpenes are, so that if a consumer comes in and says, you know, I'm really looking for a product that has limonene, you know, it's very hard to go backwards and yeah. see. So they can just take a quick look through our guide and see, oh, OG Kush has limonene and try that. And so, you know, this is the value added that a small establishment, or maybe a big one, can do too, but it takes time, it takes energy, but it's that energy and of relationship we put into our retailers that will keep them buying our product. And so through this time where the product levels level out, you know, we're good. We're good. Yeah. We're selling our product. We're maintaining relationships. And And the other thing that Gibby's is doing now is supporting research. It's very important.
Really? I mean,
we were the first.
What kind of research you guys?
What's that?
Go into that. I'd love to know about that.
Yeah, sure. This is the first state to actually have a research license. You know how many research licenses there are?
One.
And it's actually more like a co-op environment. And you know what? I admit I haven't been on lately to actually look it up, but there's a group that was doing research independent of licensing while this industry was growing. And we were friends and we supported them in various ways. But now we actually donate to the Cannabis Center of Excellence. And they are doing this 2-year study on the medicinal benefit to the veteran population through doctors and pharmacists and so on. So we support them financially because, of course, you know, research groups typically get federal grant monies and so on, and they cannot take a dime of federal grant monies because it's a cannabis research group. So we support them financially, but we're also trying to find a method to support them with our finished product. One of our business plans is to give a certain percentage of finished products to research groups so that they can use quality product. Right now, those that are federally okayed can only get federal product, and I'm hoping it's improved, but within a couple years ago, it was just garbage cannabis, and yep. It's not even worth working with. That was kind of the feedback we were getting. So right now, there isn't, through Metric, which is the seed-to-sale tracking software, there isn't a real simple way to donate. But we've been working with the CCC, trying to get that going. And what we'd like to do, working with the Cannabis Center of Excellence, is do a veteran assistance program where, working with partner retailers, we would, you know, sell our product for $1.
And yeah, then, exactly. You have to show it on the books that you had it, you grew it, but this is what exactly. You just got it to.
And then it would become accessible to registered veterans at a low cost. And they take the feedback, not a survey, but I guess it's a survey that they would take with them and record back to the study how this cannabis, the different strains benefited them, what kind of impact it made on their overall life, that type of thing. So, you know,
it's stuff that needs to be done too, the documentation on that stage. I was at a conference and I went to, they had two different speakers over this 3-day conference in Chicago, and I listened to this this vet came, you know, he was a warfighter and he got blown up. I mean, that's what he says. Yeah. He's like, I lost my leg. I've got limited, like, he's just got all these parts missing from him.
Yeah.
And he's talking about, you know, how heavily prescribed he was. And I think too, it goes back to the education part of it, of the VA. I mean, not discounting him. There's a place for it, but he was just like, oh, they give you medicine for pain. They give you some medicine to help you use the bathroom. They give you, he says, I'm taking 21, 25. He goes, they just stack all these medicines. And then I met a person, and it was actually the guy sitting next to him that owned this veterans organization of getting vets in off of all these crazy bad drugs. These things aren't, I mean, they're helping them temporarily. Nasty. They're not good for them. And he says, I don't take anything. He says, I wake up in the morning. He goes, I wake and bake in the morning. The guy was really funny, but he tells this great story. And you're just 45 minutes goes by like a snap. And you're like, listen to his story about his story of getting into the service, where he came from. That's just a touch of it. And then he talks about the challenges he had with all the medical issues. And, has a prosthetic. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, you really have to honor the veteran population for getting us here. Because they were imprisoned, they kept fighting, protesting, trying to make this herb accessible to them. Not only was it illegal, you know, legislatively, but if they were busted with it, they could lose their VA benefits. I mean, craziness. And so now, but they kept the fight going. Truly, you have to honor that, that whole population for getting us to this legalization point. But now, it needs to be more accessible. The price for consuming it is not cheap. And that it will come down over time, but not to help the immediate population right now. So that's how this next program that I'm working with the Center, Cannabis Center of Excellence, CCE, I forget the order, CCE. But what I'm working with them now is so that we can donate our product and working with the partner retailers, make it accessible to veterans who are registered in the program. And, just the whole benefit of cannabis across the board. Like I said, I mentioned Crohn's, healing Crohn's.
Yes,
not
healing.
Just smothering. This is an endocannabinoid imbalance, seizures. I mean, Charlotte with the oil,
that's an amazing story.
Yes. And that family, the sacrifice of that family, the legal implications and all that. So we just can't take it for granted. And that's part of, we so honor this herb and we try to find partners, retail manufacturing partners who also honor it. Consumers are getting far more savvy about the parts and pieces, the cannabinoids, the terpenes within it. So yes, we partner with the retailers who are educating their bud tenders and giving permission to the bud tenders to educate consumers, because it takes time. And in this, quick society of come on, move it along, pay your bill, and let's get the next one in.
Get the next cannabis one.
There's certainly a certain group of retailers that we have the privilege of working with who take that time. They're calm. What's the experience you're looking for is the question they're asking, not just there's our menu, pick what you want. And it's exciting to be a part of that.
There's a couple places I've been into, Kim. I can share the names offline with you, but they actually have like the retail store, and then they have sign up for consultation, and they've got someone, they've got two separate rooms that are like, they're just a couple big leather cozy chairs, and they're kind of like, they're like almost looks like the whole like library setting type thing, and you go in there and you can talk to someone that actually knows all about the herb, the plant, what each, like you say, each terpene, each cannabinoid, everything does for the person, and what, you know, what's ailing them. And this is what we read, maybe you should try this, and like they develop a plan, but it's like sign up for a consultation. So I think it's going to go that way a little bit. Like as
it is,
there'll be people that do the studying and they want something. And then there'll be the other ones that are like, hey, listen, cause you can definitely, you get overwhelmed. Like, like walking into a store, you look at the offering, you're like, I don't even know where to start. I don't even know what question to ask.
Exactly. Do you like a sativa or an indica? That seems to be the bulk of what people identify with, but it's coming along. It's and coming along.
Down to like, do you like to chill out or do you want a little bit of pep? You know, there exactly. I've heard them say that too.
Yeah. You but want to smoke a little and then clean your whole house or go out and mow your yard? Or do you want to smoke a little and just whoosh, relax? And that's, we make a tincture that we actually advertise in those terms. You know, this one balances you out. This one lifts you up, you know, that type of thing. And there's a lot more edible type products, tincture products that are being promoted like that. And they're a blend of terps or cannabinoids from different strains. And that's fine too. And you know, we've been doing pop-ups. And so one of my recent pop-ups, I was amazed at how many first-time buyers were coming
in. First-time cannabis users. There's still so many new customers out there that are just kind of like building up the courage to go into the store because it's been such a like a hush hush. Oh my God. It's exciting. Hey,
just like me whispering in the beginning that we were getting into cannabis cultivation. It's the same thing. But to your point, the more retailers that have that information bar, have the, if you say I'm a first time, who's the best bartender to talk to? And they point, oh, she'll take care of you, or he'll take care of you. And cause it's hard. It's a lot of knowledge to have a handle on. And that's why we've put together these cheat sheets just to assist in knowledge building.
It's great. It's just great things. I want to circle back. I know you talked a little bit about the veterans community and everything. At that same conference, I met some people and I've had some brainstorming sessions with their, like one of the, I don't know if he was one of the owners, but we're talking about ideas, like how we as a company could help. And he was saying that what we were kind of coming up with is developing something because a lot of these veterans, they're kind of lost and like they're growing. He's like, I grew plants and this is how the growing part of it in the journey of learning how to like pop a seed or get a cutting and grow a plant in a tent. Yes. And he goes, and it's such a therapeutic thing that he goes, we're promoting and like, we're just kind of developing. And he's like, we just need some cultivators to talk to these people, almost like give them a lesson. Not that they want to grow. They want to, you know, we'll call it just their own little license to grow a half dozen plants or five plants. And he says, therapy,
they don't need a license to grow.
They don't.
No.
And he says that we can grow. It goes, but the therapy that it develops, you know, like people say gardening so therapeutic. He goes, you're just gardening indoors, you know, and it's just that therapy. And then they're growing their medicine. That's like, it's a full circle.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And it's so cool. Like I was saying, geez, I'm like, we got to figure something out when I was, you know, like it's such an exciting time right now in this industry.
It is. And I'm hugely support the home growers, you know, why not? It's an herb. I mean, it's a persnickety herb. It isn't an easy one to grow. It's not oregano. And so a lot of people do get frustrated. You know, they throw a half a dozen plants outside in the summer and then don't harvest on time and they end up with mold. And that's just the learning curve. But there are people who are serious about it. There's a little fair, I forget how it's promoted, in Central Mass in the summer that we went to for the first time last year. And home growers were able to show their wares. They made edibles, there was flour and so on. And they couldn't sell, mind you, it was a trade or something, but it doesn't really matter. I was really taken aback a little bit and again humbled. We had our Gibby's Garden t-shirts on and people were like, oh my gosh, are you Gibby's? Oh, I would love to be able to put my product in the market. You know, these guys have, women and men have such pride in their product. I mean, they put a lot of love into it. They're breeding, they're making their own strains. And I was really impressed with that. I was humbled by it. And I encourage it. I mean, go for it, grow your own. And to your point, it is absolutely therapeutic to grow anything, but to be able to make your own product and share it with those you love and, you know, those. You know,
there's people that are getting, like, you hear some of these larger companies will say that they're, you know, they're not promoting it. They might not be against it, but they're not encouraging it. And, you know, I do tomatoes every year, but you know what? I can only get tomatoes in August. And exactly. After August, I still buy tomatoes at the store all the time. Yeah.
You're not putting a 500 square foot greenhouse in your backyard.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like, grow it, get the therapy out of it. And it's a journey. And then, you know, people, I think they're like nervous. Oh, they're going to grow their own, or they're going to sell their own. They're going to do this, do that. They're like, they're really the volume.
So
yes, you know,
it doesn't matter. It's an herb. You know, when we get stressed starting the small group business and the intensity of it, making choices like your awesome lights or the material we're going to grow rooms with or build rooms with, I would have to stop periodically and say to the team, look, we're growing a plant. We're growing an herb. Bottom line, we're not making a widget. And while right now it's constrained to Massachusetts, that's not been a bad way for a small company to start with, because I mean, it'll be years in my estimation before, you know, the federal government gets a clue.
Yeah, and for global distribution, it's going to be a while. I mean, I don't see that happening in March.
Just to have state barriers drop won't happen until every state is 100% legal. And that's a ways out. And we could have a discussion about why that is, but there will come changes, and they'll come rolling in when the federal government starts their thing. And I'm not really anxious for it, because then we get the FDA to deal with and other things that are going to complicate the works. I'm hopeful that our attorney generals and other states' attorney generals will, you know, give them the Heisman and say, our laws, our testing protocol, our regulations, back off. I'm hoping, but there'll be such a variety throughout the nation that'll be tough. But
it's going to be interesting. We're still, again, I am so excited to be in this industry, and I love coming to see you guys. It's awesome. And just, great. I mean, it's such a cool thing. And, you know, 95% of the people that I meet on a day-to-day basis across the US, when I'm calling on folks, it's pretty darn awesome. I mean, everybody, there's always a great backstory. There's a certain passion behind it. I mean, and then when you talk to folks that are just thinking about the monetary value, I'm like, well, yes, there's that part of it, but it's way more. It's just way more to it. But I love it.
And like we said, we've only just started to understand the endocannabinoid systems, and the more leeway we give to research, the faster we'll get the knowledge base. And we need to do it before, you know, the pharmaceutical companies get their fingers
synthesize it.
Exactly. And, you know, perhaps there'll be a positive spin on that too. I'm not saying that they have no value, but it's an herb. So take it in its natural form. I mean, I will always test our own products, but my thing is tincture. That is how I use this cannabis herb. And it's so awesome for consumers to have all the options. You don't have to inhale. There's a variety of things, and they're only going to get more creative, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I need to try that. If that was the first time I heard you talking about the tincture, the drops and how you make it and like how you process it. I'm like, that's definitely something that's very appealing to me, because I'm not a huge smoker, but it's nice to know, like just nice to know that there's so many different delivery systems.
Oh, no question. And people get more confident in trying different methods.
Sure.
And it's nice to be where I am. Gibby's Garden is just a small, loving environment. And so I'm confident that when somebody tries our product, that's what they should get out of it. And we have a lot of folks we have a couple people that came from corporate cannabis, and we have people who come and interview positions, and they want this as well.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, a lot of people would love to do what we do, and so we never take it for granted. You know, we grow cannabis. I still wake up in the middle of the night sometime and go, I can't believe it at this time, and just how things have changed, but they've only just begun to change. And to your point, to be a part of this industry and to be able to not just watch it, but to actually be a mover in
we're setting up how it goes. You know, every person that we talk to, you and I talk to separately, independently, together, we're developed. We're the ones who are, there's people that come to me all the time that they have not a clue, or they think that they knew how. They had a guy that they knew that grew some weed, and then when you talk to them,
I got a guy.
But it's like it's such a yeah. I love being on a. It's like pioneers, you know. It's so great,
yes.
You know, and I love being able to educate people about it. But this has been great, Kim. Thank you so much for setting us aside. I know we've been talking for quite a while, and it's. This is awesome. We'll have you back on too, because I want to learn more about certain things that you guys do. But thank you again for your time, and we'll again talk soon. So
thanks,
everyone here,
Johnny.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kim. Have a great day.
We appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Grow Sessions. This podcast is brought to you by TSR Grow. I hope you learned something today. If you have any questions you'd like answered, please feel free to reach out to us through our social media channels or via our website. www.tsrgrow.com. Please don't forget to share this podcast, and remember, keep cultivating.